Hey, this is Mike from the High Hash Rate Podcast. Before we get started, I just want to do a brief shout out to a partnership of ours, the Freedom Festival 2024 in the heart of New England on May 4th. Participate in a unique celebration where the pursuit of freedom, health, and community values come together through engaging activities and inspiring experiences. Immerse yourself in all things Bitcoin. That's right, including Bitcoin speakers, Bitcoin music, Texas Slim's Cattleman's Feast Barbecue, Bitcoin workshops, and etc. Participate in interactive demonstrations like parkour, cold plunge, wow, that sounds fun, hot tub, a soccer contest, and a raffle with prizes. Buy your tickets today. Enter discount code MASSADOPTION, that's MASSADOPTION, for a 20% discount. You could also visit, for more information, massadoption.net. Anyway, on to our show.
Screw it. Here we go.
There's nothing against atheists in individual at all. But like, I just don't think it's a coincidence that at the moment where arguably in world history, we have peak atheism, peak people, you know, trying to live in the world on their own and come up with ways to figure out how to operate secular, peak secularism. You also have peak mental health issues, you know, and like, it's just, again, even if you, that doesn't make any sense to you. I'm just thinking like, yeah, it's peak fiat. Like literally, we're peak fiat. Like the peak moment in which we are less connected to the natural rhythms of what the scriptures would call sowing and reaping that have ever existed. I don't know if we've ever had a moment that was this fiat in that sense.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps. Hey, welcome back to High Hash Rate. It's Dan, Mike, and today we're talking to the head of content and education for Thank God for Bitcoin. We're talking to Jordan Bush. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Man, thank you guys for having me.
No problem. For listeners who haven't heard of Thank God for Bitcoin, can you give your 2-minute elevator pitch to explain what that is to us?
The most preposterously named thing of all time. The funny story that I tell is that we were writing Thank God for Bitcoin. There was 8 of us. We were on a Zoom call talking about kicking around different names. Somebody, George McHale, works for Bitcoin Magazine. He's like, hey guys, I've been really thinking about this. I think it should be Thank God for Bitcoin. And I was the only one of us at that point working in vocational ministry. I was a church planter, you know, pastor, missionary living in Uruguay. And I thought to myself, well, at least we know it's not going to be that one, because that is literally the most cornball worst name I've ever heard in my life. And then it just grew on us. And so over time. But yeah, so basically we exist to help the broader Christian world understand what Bitcoin is and why it matters. The primary way that we do that at this point is by doing, I co-host a couple podcasts, and then we do several events. We have one primary big event that we do. We follow around the Bitcoin Magazine conference and go wherever they go. And then we do an event either the day before or the 2 days before their events.
That's right.
So that's primarily what you do.
That's what I've heard of you guys. And you were born in a religious household, I assume, yeah. Or a specific church. Like, what is your professional background?
Sure.
And previous experience, you kind of touched on it, but in Christian ministry.
Yeah, so I grew up, my dad was a first-generation Christian. His dad was an alcoholic and dragged him to the bar as a little kid. And so I think about that and how completely different that was from the way that I grew up, and it just still blows my mind. And really the thing that attributed that to is he started going to this small church in Northeast Pennsylvania, and these guys, and there was a number of men in the church who kind of saw the situation and really just started spending time and just inviting him to church and bringing him to church and picking him up. And so his life was just completely different than the environment that he grew up in. So that was kind of his thing. And then my mom didn't have the same kind of dramatic story, but her parents had become Christians a few years before she was born. And so she functionally grew up in a Christian family. And so my upbringing was, you know, growing up in a church where we were at church every Sunday, or growing up in a family where we were at church every Sunday. My parents worked for a Christian nonprofit organization. That's just all I ever knew was growing up, going to church and studying the Bible. And so, you know, got to, you know, really enjoyed it, really loved that side of things for a while, and then got to middle and high school, and I just wanted to be normal and wanted to be liked. And so I just kind of left that, pushed it to the side, and wasn't going to make waves. My parents still made me go to church, and, you know, I wasn't thrilled about it, but I just was, you know, wasn't going to make a big deal out of it. And then it really wasn't until the end of high school where you just kind of got to the point where, again, I could have intellectually told you, I intellectually believed that Jesus was real. I intellectually believed that, that I would have given you mental assent to these things, but I didn't want to waste my time with it. I just wanted to live my life in the way that I wanted to. And so it wasn't until right before college that really kind of the lights turned on, and I just realized not only is this true, but like Jesus, as preposterous as this sounds, Jesus is alive and he loves me. And so if you would have told me a number of years ago that that'd be a point that I would have gotten to, I would have told you were a moron. And so then I kind of went on to college from there, wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to go to either Syracuse University or like UNC Chapel Hill and become a sports journalist, go work for ESPN.
Oh yeah.
And so then I ended up going to Bible college for a year, was planning on doing 1 year and then transferring, and just fell in love with the Bible and God, which again sounds preposterous, I fully recognize. But I'm not a morning person, and we're studying the Bible for like 6-7 hours a day. And I was just waking up early to go read the Bible extra and to do these things. And so I got to the point where I just realized, man, this is really what I want to do with my life. And so long story short, my wife and I started raising support to become missionaries and moved to Uruguay. And kind of
to put it in like, you know, a lot of Bitcoin parlance, your first big life-changing rabbit hole was the Bible, right?
Yeah.
And so, And so I guess to connect this, what is your Bitcoin story? At what point in your journey did you realize that Bitcoin wasn't just an interesting new technology, that it was a gift from God? Like, when was it that you decided that you wanted to share this with your family, your own church, your own church, Christianity more broadly, like the world ultimately? Like, what point did it go from technology to this is a gift?
Yep. Yeah. And so again, there's people who kind of, they buck at or kind of feel a certain way, kind of feel weird about saying that Bitcoin is a gift from God. And so again, there's senses in which people can say that and mean that, in which I would agree it is kind of squirmy, kind of weird. But there's a verse in, I believe it's the book of James, where it says that every good gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights. And so basically just the idea that if something is good, it comes from God. One of the good things that God gives us are ideas. I genuinely believe that, you know, good ideas that we have they're not just things that we just came up with by virtue of being super brilliant or whatever. There's so many things that have to come together at the right time in order for us to come up with an idea and then, you know, have it be something that actually serves people. And so really where this point of where, you know, where I kind of saw the value of Bitcoin and as it related to, again, the spheres that I was in, my wife and I, again, and our family were living in Uruguay in South America. Uruguay is one of the most secular countries in the Western Hemisphere. Probably even more now, but around 50% of the country would claim to be either atheist or agnostic. And so that's one of the reasons why
the president is atheist, right? Like notably, or he was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, Pepe Mujica. He's, you know, famously the poorest president in the world. Mm. He had this crazy story where he was tortured by a military dictatorship supported by the CIA, Operation Condor. Go check that out. So he ended up coming to power and is, yeah, famously atheist. And so we went there thinking that we were going to start a church in a pretty atheist place. And then we get there and a bunch of the people we started to meet and what ended up being half of our church community were Venezuelan immigrants, who, you know, had their currency vaporized and ended up leaving the country and trying to find and start over someplace else and make money and send it home. And so it was really through that process, just seeing what currency devaluation does to families and, does to communities. And again, just even in Uruguay, where it's got one of the healthiest economies in South America, there's still among the small group of churches that existed, there weren't hardly any churches that were able to pay pastors a living wage. Almost no church owned their own building because, you know, the currency failed since 1971, fails on average every 13 years. And so, you know, as these guys are saving up money to try to maybe move into buying a building or to hire a pastor or whatever, the money becomes worthless and they have to start all over again. So it was really during that process where I just saw the problem with fiat and how broken and, you know, destructive fiat was. And then it was about 4 years later I guess I bought some Bitcoin, I guess, 2 years after that. But I really didn't go down the rabbit hole until early 2019. And so it was really going down that process that I really understood that Bitcoin was created to solve this issue that was causing so much destruction in the lives of, you know, people who we knew and loved in Uruguay.
Yeah. You mentioned kind of, and I've heard you mention this before on a different podcast, but you said something about the name of the name of Thank God for Bitcoin and kind of the ick and the feeling of trying to communicate that that's what it really means. When I imagine it, like Bitcoin kind of has this reputation, right? So when you go to a new church or you meet another Christian and you make this case, right? Like there's always that risk that if they're skeptical, right, that it's like they feel like you're trying to sell them something, you're trying to pump your own bags. But how do you explain that, like, no, I'm not trying to sell you something. I'm trying to show you that this is kind of a tool that you can use to stop having to make so many fiat trade-offs to fit in with the fiat system, to survive in the fiat system, to finance missionaries in the fiat system. You have to make all these trade-offs just to interact with the fiat system. And Bitcoin's kind of a tool that lets them stop making so many trade-offs. How do you convince them of that if they're skeptical at first?
Yep. Yeah, again, I think you guys have seen this. Like, there's people who you desperately want to get Bitcoin, and so you do your best to kind of make this impassioned case and, you know, try to use all your favorite Preston Pish arguments and, you know, James Lavish. And, you know, you try to do your best thing to kind of bring up all the latest and best points. But again, there's another verse where Jesus, he says, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. And so you have this idea of, like, if you don't see a problem, you're not going to look for a solution. And so part of the way that when I talk to people is I just try to kind of lay out some of these, you know, problems, the, you know, some of the ways in which, and again, my case in as a missionary, like it's a, I would say to Christians, it's a more dramatic story than some other ones. And so I just kind of share what I just shared with you guys. It just, you know, we saw people who were making $100,000 a year in US dollar terms living in Venezuela, who 3 years later couldn't pay the rent and had to flee the country, start over, and couldn't pay their rent in Uruguay. And so, I mean, just that level, the you know, speed of it, the destruction of it, you know, just seeing, like, this is not some random person we heard about, read in a book from 100 years ago. This is, you know, Luis from, you know, who I know he's right down the street, you know, like that's just that real. And so trying to do those things. Again, there's other conversations that I have depending on who I'm talking to, the specific, you know, specific
sure
buttons to push for them. But again, like there's different ways. So we're talking about, there's people who are into, you know, like the Christian education. There's more and more Christian schools and Christian colleges that are having to shut down because they can't make the economics work. They have to, you know, try to change up their business model. Some of them, you know, start offering business classes, just to try to, you know, open themselves up to a different group of potential clients, students. You also have things like the Canadian trucker protests that happened.
Right.
You know, that was something where I literally, non-ironically had been praying for something like that to happen because it would be the perfect value proposition, perfect way to demonstrate the value proposition of Bitcoin. And so that's something where, you know, there's churches who, you know, believe things that are outside the Overton window, cancelable, as it relates to a number of different things, you know, in America.
Sure.
So the idea that you could be canceled for a certain belief that you have is not that far from being something that could be real, and Bitcoin represents a way to,
or, you know,
some optionality with those things.
Even if it's not from the angle of worrying about being canceled, even if it's from the incentive of, you have a lot of churches that bend their, you know, their principles and their values to be more accepting, right? Because what's the fiat incentive, right? The more people, the more people who can tithe, the more people who can support your organization. Yeah. And having to make that's another trade-off that people are having to make. And it's it has consequences. Some people may not agree with the consequences. Some people may think it's good. But based on your values, you know, those are trade-offs that have to be made.
Yeah. And so, again, so it's, you know, you want to have optionality. You want to have the ability to not be beholden, to be as least beholden to things that are outside of your control as possible. I think another one you mentioned actually in the beginning was, you know, just missionaries supporting, you know, like you literally have Christians giving, I'm not exaggerating, billions of dollars every year to, you know, to
right.
print Bibles and to send money and send people around the world to help people in different ways. And there's some of those countries where they don't have the SWIFT system. They don't have access to the U.S. banking system. And so they have to go to crazy lengths to get money into the, some of those places. And so Bitcoin represents a way that, you know, you can get money into Russia to support missionaries, or you
right.
can get, you know, money into Southeast Asia, to some of these countries that are more hostile, and try to shut themselves off or KYC the living daylights out of
sure.
people for trying to get money in there.
Right. The go ahead, Mike.
Something you just pointed out to me, Jordan, was the importance of churches onboarding.
Yeah.
And how that will not only bring back revenue to the, you know, to their ministry,
yeah.
but also bring in people, bring in the
yep.
the folks.
Yep. Yeah, and that's, again, agreed. That's just, I mean, it's churches. Again, people want to shy away from this, but like churches, there's a very real sense in which they are businesses, and you know, they're you get the question. This is where it gets down to, like, what is a business, you know? And I mean, there's people who, the idea of making money, they feel like, oh, this is yucky or unspiritual or something, and like, I just could not think more differently than that. I mean, just the reality is, you know, everything. If churches are offering a very necessary and good service, good churches are offering a necessary and good service, just like any other, you know, just like a grocery store is, just like another thing.
Right.
You know, people's spiritual needs are real. And the cost to not having those needs met is huge and catastrophic. I mean, we see, I don't think it's, again, we can, this is somewhat speculative, but I don't think it's an accident that, you know, we're and again, there's nothing against atheists in individual at all, but like, I just don't think it's a coincidence that at the moment where arguably in world history, we have peak atheism, peak people, you know, trying to live in the world on their own and come up with ways. Peak secularism. You also have peak mental health issues, you know, and like, it's just, again, even if you,
peak
that
fiat,
doesn't exist to you, I'm just thinking
it's
like
peak fiat.
Yeah, it's peak fiat. Like, literally, we're peak fiat, like the peak moment in which we are less connected to the natural rhythms of what the scriptures would call sowing and reaping that have ever existed. I don't know if we've ever had a moment that was this fiat in that sense.
And I don't think that it's any coincidence that being that out of rhythm with, you could almost boil it down to that out of rhythm and out of sync with
yeah.
nature itself.
Yes. Yep.
And it's no coincidence that being that out of sync with nature itself, that so many people are afraid that nature is going to, like, the climate's going to kill them.
Yeah.
Like, they're just so out of sync with it that they feel so out of control that they think that that's going to be their demise, right? It's what are they ultimately fearing?
I
right?
laughed because like, I was one wanna, of those dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you boil it down to what maybe an atheist or a, what's the other one?
Agnostic,
right? Yeah. Like, what are they? Ultimately, a lot of the agnostics will say, like, you know, God is like this power, it's this universe. It's like, you've just renamed what you're yeah. fearing, right? You're fearing nature, you're fearing the climate. What you're fearing is God.
Yeah, like,
and understanding like how that actually works versus like this voodoo science is just
yeah, everyone, like, this is the thing, is again, like, everyone, when people think about, they think like, I don't believe in a God. You know, it's, the question is not whether you will believe in a God. The question is which God you believe in. Like, this is, everyone has a being.
Call it whatever you want to call it.
Wow, yeah. That is a wonderful distinction.
Call it whatever you want to call it, but
it's what you can't explain.
Yeah, and like, everybody has exceptions. Everybody has miracles within their purview. You know, like, everyone, I mean, we acknowledge the laws of thermodynamics. Like, something can't come from nothing. Something can't create itself. Everyone acknowledges that. Well, the fact that we're here means that somewhere along the line there was an exception to that
right.
to that rule. I mean, there's matter where there wasn't matter originally, and so nobody has an explanation. Like, secular people who are completely atheistic, they don't accept any kind of belief in, you know, a supreme being, whatever his character or name is. You know, they don't have any conception of that. They don't have a way to explain why we have something rather than nothing. They just can say, well, all we can know is that it is here. And so in any event, everyone has exceptions. So I think that's something that doesn't get talked a lot about, but, there's an excellent, interview Joe Rogan had on, a Christian and a scientist named, Dr. Stephen Meyer. He had him on a few months ago. Fantastic interview. Talks about a lot of things that don't get, just there's no platform for a lot of these conversations. And I'd highly recommend people going to check that out.
So, I mean, there's just so many things that we touched upon back there. And it really made me think about all these kinds of avenues we could take this conversation.
Yeah.
The one thing I do want to say is how I know you, Jordan.
Oh, man.
This is sort of an interesting way of entering into someone's life. So I do video editing.
Okay.
And we were working at, because I work at Swan, and we were doing video editing for the Captain Sid documentary.
It's
the man who,
I don't know what this is.
The guy who motorcycled around.
Oh, yeah.
Rode his Harley.
Yeah.
He rode his orange Harley around to a bunch of different Bitcoin meetups in America. Like the Bitcoin dream, like the Bitcoin America.
Yeah.
Right. So I edited this thing and you showed up in this.
I remember that.
You know, in an interview. And it was a really good interview. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And what that made me think about tonight, because I knew I was going to have you on here.
Yeah.
It made me think about is like this transformation of, because what you do is you end up getting a relationship. Like you form a relationship with the person that you're editing.
Mm.
They don't know you, but you have a very distinct.
It's like listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
Exactly. Feel like they're your friends, but they don't
know. The parasocial relationship, but they call that, you know, like where, you know, it's like a one-sided thing, you know them. And
right.
It made me think about this idea of, you know, I know you have this religious background, maybe like this idea of like Jesus as this meme throughout history.
Mm.
And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about who the man was as to what he's turned into.
Yeah. Like how the transformation of the idea of the person, the son, the part of that Trinity.
Because it's not like you can know them. Like me, I'm looking at you while I'm editing. It's not like you can know that.
There's no video.
That's this image of that person.
Yeah. Well, and this is again, it gets really interesting. There's multiple layers to this. So, like this, one of the things I would say is, so there's again, Bible verse. There's one of the, I can't remember which gospel or which epistle. So one of the New Testament letters that the Apostle Paul writes to some of these churches, he says to them, though you have not seen him, talking about Jesus, though you have not seen him, you love him. And so like this is the claim of the claim of being a Christian is that it's to believe that Jesus died on the cross for your sins, okay? And then he rose from the dead. He's alive. He's out here running around. He's roaming around in the world. He's able to be known. And so again, it's this long distance relationship that you have with somebody who, you know, I've never met. And so I've never met physically, but there's, you really can have a relationship with God. This is the Christian claim, whether or not you believe it or not. This is the Christian claim, is that you can have a relationship with God that's real. It's not a, you know, physical relationship, but it's still real. And so I think, you know, that would be one thing that I would say is, you know, even though I've never seen God, I've never, you know, seen Jesus, I've never seen, you know, any of these things, I'm more certain of things related to him than I am like anything else. Like, I think you actually can know him. Now, with that being said, there's still, you know, there's all kinds of questions that could then come about. Like, why do, you know, if that's true, then why doesn't Jesus like make himself so obviously known to everyone? Why does he just come right out and say this is? And so that's a far more interesting question.
Yeah,
that's lot more interesting thing.
That's where I was kind of going with that in my mind when you were explaining that, is why doesn't it make it so obvious?
Yeah.
But once you see it, you, without seeing the pictures, without seeing the person, but once you recognize it, that, you know, you love him before you, without seeing him, you can't not see it everywhere. You can't not see it in every little aspect of your life and every little aspect of the world. You can't not see it. And once, you can never go back. And so it's finding, but the way when you came to that realization, it was something personal in your life that, you know, it was, you mentioned kind of, it was in college, right at the end of high school. You almost kind of had put it aside and come back.
Yeah.
And it's finding that what in other people and kind of guiding it to help them see what you see, but through their own lens. Yeah. I feel like that's often really the challenge. But it's almost like it is there. You just have to find it for that, you know, the other person has to find it.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think the thing that I found, honestly, was that, again, my point of crisis, like, that I came to was I knew these things were true. I knew Jesus was real. I knew all these things. I just didn't want to acknowledge him because it would mean that I would have to give up things that I didn't want to give up. It would
mean
that I would have to do things. And so I had this understanding of freedom that was like, I just want to be able to do whatever I want to do. And that's freedom. And so like the problem is like, that's not what actual freedom is. You know, there's this famous, David Foster Wallace, I think, he gave this graduation speech and he talked about,
this is water.
Yeah. This is water. Yeah. And so he talked about, you know, there's these fish swimming around in the ocean and the one, you know, they're just swimming around. And one day, this older fish asked them, you know, hey boys, what's the water like? And the one looks at the other and he's like, what's water? You know, he just had no, these guys didn't even think about the fact that, you know, they just totally took for granted the thing that they had going on. And so, you know, we're sitting here, we're so accustomed to things in our life that we just can't imagine the world any differently. But when someone says, you know, I just want to be free, you know, they think of freedom as just plain autonomy, the ability to do whatever I want to do. It would be similar to like a fish saying, I'm going to be free and jumping out of the water.
Going against its nature. Going against its nature.
Exactly. Acting against your nature and going outside of the parameters that are these good governing principles that are designed to give you life and to foster your life and present you with the ideal situation to be in. When you go outside of that, then you actually find this is not freeing. This actually brings death. And so the Christian claim is, and the broader claim is just like, there is what the question that we need to define is, what is the nature of what a human being is? You know, what are those parameters for what it means to be human? You know, the governing principles that, although they seem oppressive, they seem like they're going to restrict you, they actually free you to be and live out the life that you were made to live out. And so that's a bigger question. But like, honestly, I don't see any way to kind of get around that reality. You know,
right.
There's biological limitations that, you know, we find freedom once we submit ourselves to them. So I can't just eat whatever I want to. You know, I enjoy, one of the things that we do with our family is like, I am a primo chocolate chip cookie maker. Yeah. I have tried tons of chocolate chip cookie recipes. I found one, I like tailored it to myself. And in my mind, it is the best chocolate chip cookie recipe. If all I do is eat chocolate chip cookies 24/7, 365, I will die. I will suffer horribly. I will cause suffering in the lives of my family having to take care of me. It'll be awful. And so if I were to ignore the biological realities that exist, that are foundational principles, I can't deny them. If I were to do that, it would bring about a lot of pain and all kinds of bad things. And so the Christian claim is that there's those same type of principles exist in the spiritual realm.
Right.
There's things that we were made to, you know, practices that we were made to partake in. There's relationships that we were made to, you know, submit ourselves to that bring us freedom, even though they limit our autonomy.
There you go.
And so that's kind of the way that I would parse it.
Yeah. I think the idea of these governing principles, you know, these spiritual realm laws of nature, so to speak, if you wanted to say that, you know, God created, you know, these principles, that idea of the meme, the Bible stories, the scriptures are just, they're very relatable, oftentimes elementary and basic stories that you can use to kind of deduce like, oh, what it's telling me that like, when I experience something like this in my life, like this is one of those governing principle moments. Yep. This is the lesson I can learn from that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I think this is, again, the Bible is a whole thing. Like the Bible is the most incredible. I mean, it's astounding. The level of depth, of profundity, of, I mean, it's just so, there's so much wisdom there, but that wisdom is like sits just beneath the surface to where like, you're like, all right, I have to get past this first initial step where it just seems so ridiculous. Like the claims here sound so ridiculous.
I'm reading some boring code.
Like, okay, well, yeah. All right, I'm going to lend some credibility. I'm going to do this. And then what you start to find is, man, this makes a lot more sense than I was initially thinking. And this is a lot less like fairy tale land than I was thinking. And one of the examples that I can't remember, I was maybe on a podcast talking about this, but it's in the book of John chapter 2. It says, Basically, he'd just done this miracle. All kinds of people were like, whoa, look at this miracle you did. And it says, but as for Jesus, he refused to entrust himself to them, because Jesus knew what was in man. And he basically knew that he couldn't trust him. So it was like Jesus understood fair weather fanism.
Yeah.
He understood that when you do a miraculous thing like he did, the temptation is going to be, it's going to be real sexy for, you know, the people who are seeing that to want to affiliate themselves with you. And Jesus just refused to do that. He refused to be like, all right, yeah, look, I'm the guy. He withdraws. He constantly does the exact opposite of what you think he would do and what most of us would do if we had some level of, you know, the level of fame that he was getting,
right,
attention,
right,
that he was getting.
So in all that, you know, after all that, because this is a Bitcoin podcast, of course.
Yeah. Boom. Let's go.
Is there a relationship to Satoshi and Satoshi's story that you can talk about?
Not the man, but the story, you know, kind of the miraculous, you know, and the sacrifice disappearing, destroying the keys,
Something I'm getting at is that
something I think about a lot is that Jesus gave his body, you know?
Yep.
And you know what I thought about, you know, in this sort of religious sense that I'm making these connections?
Yeah.
Satoshi gave his identity.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No. It is so profound. And so this is okay. So this is one of these things. So if you guys ever heard of typology,
a little bit. Yeah. Concept? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, what typology is? It's just types. Okay. So there's things
like archetypes in movies.
Yes, archetypes. That'd be a good example. Yeah. So there's archetypes. So there's things. There's these, you know, like the hero's journey. Like that's an archetypical,
yep,
you know, thing. And so the thing is, all throughout the scriptures, there's these types that are just repeated over and over, and it's purposeful. There's, you know, all kinds of things. And so it's true in the scriptures. We see typology in the scriptures. We see typology in other places just within our lives. And we see typology throughout history. So you see the same type of events that happen. There's certain things where you're like, man, this isn't history repeating itself, but it's awful close. You know, it sounds very similar. And so, again, this is another archetype and another example of freedom being more complicated than we think.
Yeah. You
know, Jesus talks about this. He says, unless a seed dies, it remains in the ground. But if it dies, then it produces, you know, a tree that produces all kinds of other things. And so Satoshi, I mean, you have this guy who has, I mean, arguably one of the most valuable ideas in at least the last 60-70 years. Okay, like in terms of like how would you quantify the value of what he came up with, and what does he do with his best idea? He gives it away.
Yeah.
Now again, it wouldn't be anywhere near as valuable if he hadn't given it away.
Right.
So like
you said, like you made the comparison with Jesus and what he did with all the fame, and he kind of he abdicated, and it's like Satoshi has the wallets. He's got, you know, billions of dollars, and what does he do instead of using it? It sits dormant.
Now, I will be very careful to say, now, again, there's all kinds of theories about who Satoshi is. Now, again, there's one of the guys who was said he could be Satoshi. He was like
a
guy who's been sitting in a jail for the last, you know, South Africa,
sure,
or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy. Now, again, could it just be a function of he hasn't been able to access it, and so that's why I don't know. It could be. But, you know, at the end of the day,
but that story, the story is what's powerful.
And at the end of the day, it really could be that story that we think it is, which is that this guy either... Initially, he definitely gave away his idea, so that's, you know, that's undebatable. But then even since then, he could have died, you know, whatever. The thing is, he gave away his best idea and then disappeared. Like, that's under most circumstances of what we think have happened, there still was some window where he could have come out and said, this is who I am. He chose not to do that. We don't know why his reasons are, but it's worked out for the betterment of everybody who's used Bitcoin And if Bitcoin continues to follow its trajectory, it's going to, you know, be to the benefit of, you know, the rest of the world for, you know, there not being this, you know, easy target to aim at, you know, the way that there is.
Right, right.
A Charles Hoskins or a Vitalik or something like those lines.
100%.
And in that way, Satoshi is alive in all of us.
Yeah. And this is a thing, like, people, you know, you could say the same thing about, I mean, famous authors who, you know, create a work that lives on far beyond them. I mean, you've got, you know, works of, you know, the Iliad. My son was reading the Iliad or the Odyssey. You know, these books are written a couple thousand years ago or, you know, a long time ago, and they're still valuable and appreciated. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we still know Odysseus's name, like, all these things, it's incredible, like, on one level. And again, I think there's, the greater the sacrifice, the more likely they are to live on forever, right? For a long period of time too. You know, sacrifice, again, this death precedes life, death precedes resurrection. And so I think that that idea is true in Satoshi too. Like, this here's this guy who, you know, laid down his life, laid down his idea, gave away the most valuable thing that he had, and, you know, and then chose not to take any credit for it.
Right. Yeah. Powerful ideas. They last. And, like, you, obviously, the story of the Bible is one of the most powerful ideas. You can just say that because how many people, how much history it is, how many people around the world have that idea, same idea in their mind.
Yeah.
I did want to switch a little bit back to thank God for Bitcoin. And I was, one of my questions was, you know, what are some of the things that you, when you speak to church people in the church, people in your community, that they see as problems within their church or within their community that they're trying to solve, that Bitcoin might be, you know, a tool to help them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say still for the vast majority of people, I mean, I don't know that they see Bitcoin as solving a problem yet. I still think it's we're still so early and there's still so few people that get it. Of the people who do see it, they see it super clearly. Like, they kind of become fanatical and just want everyone to understand. But I think the things that are most obvious are things like, you know, currency devaluation, or just seeing, you know, especially since 2020, that argument's become a lot more powerful and easier to make. You know, people just seeing houses used to cost this, now they cost twice that, if not more. I'm still making roughly the same. How am I ever going to afford a house? You know, just kind of being able to kind of explain that. Again, that's not directly tied to Bitcoin, but, you know, Bitcoin being kind of like the, once you've explained the problem, then you can identify, hey, here's this thing is that's a money that you can't just print, you know, double the supply of it overnight or something like that. You can't do that. I think the censorship resistance thing, I mentioned the Canadian truckers. I think that's another one. This is, people are more sympathetic to, or growing more sympathetic to.
Yeah. One of the things that I was speaking to churches or pastors, it would be like, listen, like, you know, you can have a missionary go literally anywhere in the world, even to the most remote country, like Tonga, right?
Yep.
And it's like, they don't need a bank account. You don't even need to, like, collect the cash in a basket and pass it around and trust that the church or the pastor is sending the money, right? Everybody can just receive, hey, here's my QR code. Scan this QR code. You can send me money, you know, Bitcoin directly to my wallet. You don't even have to, if you were sick and you missed church that day, you could just still do it from bed.
Yep.
And I'm getting that money, and I can make use of it anywhere in the world and continue my ministry and not have to be distracted by, how do I get a bank account? How do I find an ATM? How can I use cash, right? It's like, it takes all that away and lets them focus kind of on the message.
Yeah, I think this, I guess I have another answer to this, would be, that's so true. And again, we make those arguments, like, we're having conversations with, you know, missions organizations that are trying to solve these problems, you know, in real time. I think one of the other things would just be, like, people, I think that because we live in such a secular world, or like a secular society, we underappreciate the value and the power of moral arguments. And so the examples I give of this are, like, so the, what was it called? The Protestant Reformation. So Martin Luther is this guy, he comes along and he just basically says, hey, there's hypocrisy within the Catholic Church. He doesn't want to just blow it up and start in his own thing. He wants to reform. It's called the Reformation for a reason. He wants to reform the church, deal with these, you know, abuses, and then we can purify the church and then it'll be great. Ends up not happening. But how does he argue? How does he make his case? He doesn't just basically, try to be like, hey, let's use pragmatic angles to, look at the cost-benefit analysis of this. He's just basically saying, no, this is hypocrisy. This is wrong. This is just you're violating what is good and true. You're actively working against what God has said he wants his ministers to do and all these things. And that ends up being, it proves to be this tremendously powerful thing that ends up turning Europe upside down and then consequently the rest of the world. Then you move to somebody like William Wilberforce. William Wilberforce was this British politician who, grew up and was not a Christian, didn't believe when he was young, gets into office and becomes a Christian and is horribly convicted, fully convicted for reasons of being a Christian, that it is wrong for Great Britain to be continuing to build their economy on the backs of African slaves under the justification that, they're not actually human or they're less than human or something along these lines. He just basically says, there's no support for this. This is wrong. It's hypocrisy. You're saying that you're Christians. You're living in such a way that's completely at odds with the way that God has revealed the world to function. You're being hypocrites. You should stop. And within his lifetime, he works to end slavery in Great Britain, the most powerful nation on earth. They willingly lay down this thing that enabled them to get free labor all over the world. And it's largely because of him. He makes this moral argument. Martin Luther King Jr. did the same thing. He basically said to, Christians in America, you guys are being hypocrites. These people were made in God's image. He does this whole thing. And so these moral arguments have tremendous power. And especially when you're dealing with a population of largely Christians, these things have weight. And so one of the things that we look at with, and I think about with Thank God for Bitcoin is, okay, how do we frame these issues? Not just in terms of, this thing is, Bitcoin, it's less than ideal. You're losing your purchasing power. There's obviously a moral component to that, but it's not just to look how hard it is around the world. It's saying, no, this is theft. It's framing currency devaluation as theft. These politicians are literally stealing buying power in order to expand their own power and expand their own wealth at the expense of everybody else. This is theft. Christians are not okay with this. This is not some peripheral thing. This is literally one of the big ones. And so I think things like that, and working to phrase some of these things and frame some of these issues in terms of sin, in terms of like this is actually, non-negotiably wrong, and subsidizing things and ideas that that are completely at odds with the way that God created humans to live and flourish. I think those things are way more powerful than people would give it credit for. And again, that's why for us, we're working to create resources that in events where we can make those arguments to people and record them, right, and ship them around the world.
How familiar are your normal run-of-the-mill Christian, how familiar are they with fiat, the concept of fiat?
Not really, not very at all. I mean, a lot of people, they vaguely have some conception of gold. Gold used to be money. Some people still think, and this goes beyond just being Christians, but a lot of people still think that we're on the gold standard. I don't think there's a great deal of familiarity. I think that has changed in the last 4 years, just because, when you double the monetary supply within a year, that tends to catch some eyebrows. And, you have a bunch of, again, I think I credit Bitcoiners to a large degree. I mean, the fact that Bitcoin is now being talked about daily on some of these large
right
programs.
Ticker's there all day long.
You got Jack Mallers, making these arguments, bashing central bankers, and Michael Saylor, all these things. I give Bitcoiners a tremendous amount of credit for helping kind of shift the Overton window, which is like the Overton window is like the range of things that are acceptable to talk about in everyday discourse.
Yeah, I think the at least like in the church I grew up in, there's a lot of emphasis on separating yourself from the rest of the world. Like the world is evil, right? And I think for me, if I were to go back to my hometown, it would be the way I would try to frame it is, fiat is the world. And as long as you have to interact with the world, right, you got to deal with the wickedness, right? And that there's a way to kind of be successful, be self-sufficient, to save and to have some censorship resistance and still flourish and still be, you know, survive and be happy outside of that, as much as you want to limit, you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's helpful. But go ahead.
No, go for it. Here.
No, the only thing I was going to say was, again, another way that, you know, I kind of present these things is just, when I got into Bitcoin, was that first year when I was going hardcore down the rabbit hole, I was also a pastor. So I was doing sermon prep, was like studying different passages, trying to get ready for Sunday. And one of the passages that I was reading was in the book of Galatians, I believe chapter 6. And the Apostle Paul says that, he says, God is not mocked, for what a man sows, that will he also reap. And so I was like trying to think about this, and I'm like, okay. So basically that's saying there's no free lunches. What you sow, there's a correlation, 100% correlation between what you do and the there being consequences of that action. And so I started to think about, like, what are other ways, other places where you see this dynamic? First of all, that's just logic. That's just how reason works. Now, reason says if this, then this. This is how, you know, seeds work. You know, you reap what you sow. You know, you don't plant orange seeds and get apples. That's just not how it works. You get, you know, things that correspond with the kind of seeds you plant. And so, again, the thing that really kind of hit me as I was, you know, thinking about this, was because I'd been thinking about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is fresh in my mind. Was just like, okay, so fiat money denies sowing and reaping. Like, it denies this relationship between, you know, there being a cost to the production of money. You know, basically
blurs the lines.
Yeah, it blurs the lines. Fiat currency just basically allows governments and central banks to make themselves gods functionally, where they can just, you know, whereas, you know, in the biblical parlance, God creates the world by speaking it into being, and functionally Jerome Powell comes out and speaks into existence what the inflation rate, or, you know, what the, not the inflation rate, what's the, oh gosh, what's it called? The interest rate. He sets the interest rate and just basically speaks into existence what capital, you know, how much capital is going to be created at what rate. And so there's really no cost to these things. So just the recognition that, you know, fiat currency denies sowing and reaping. And so by doing that, the Apostle Paul says that God is not mocked, for what a man sows, he will also reap. So if you're not acknowledging a causal relationship between sowing and reaping, you're mocking God. So one of the things I say is, like, fiat currency mocks God. It mocks the reality of the world and the way that God designed the world to function. And so you Christians don't like mocking God.
You brought up something that Breedlump brought up, actually, on a previous episode that we had. And it really, really sort of solidified this idea of fiat in my head when he said something along the lines of, you speak fiat, like man speaks. Yeah.
Yep.
A man can't speak value into existence, you know.
Yep.
And only God can do that. That's a very interesting thought.
Yeah, it's the difference between, so this is a concept, actually, the title of our conference in July this year is going to be, it's called Render to God, Stewardship, Dominion, and the Economics of Glory. And so this is I'm working on a book that's basically kind of laying out, like, economics from, like, a Christian perspective. And one of the big things is, one of the big differences between a Christian view, and this applies to other religions as well, but it's the difference in what it means to be human. In the Christian conception, humans are stewards. So we receive reality, we receive parameters, we receive, you know, rules and governing principles and in a world to live in. And then the question is, what are we going to do? How are we going to steward those resources? That's contrasted with, if God isn't real, if there is no God and it's just us, then functionally we are gods. And so then we don't have to, you know, we don't have the same onus on us to just basically acknowledge and submit ourselves to go discover and then submit ourselves to reality. We can kind of create our own reality. And so this is very much what, you know, fiat enables, you know, governments and central bankers to do, is to fashion a world according to the way that they want it to be, and then fund it. So this is, again, this is why we see, you know, historically, and lots of people pointed this out, Robert's pointed this out, like, functionally or historically, sound money was a check on endless war. you know, the reason why, you know, wars ended is because one side or both sides would run out of money and then they had to stop, or run out of men and then they'd have to stop. But fiat money, you know, and especially if you're fighting long distance wars, you're fighting wars with drones, you don't even have to sacrifice men's lives really. You know, that it's just, you end up get to this point where, you know, you can stretch the distance between sowing and eventually reaping to, you know, to much longer degrees than were formerly
right.
possible.
And everybody's a god who makes their own reality until the energy runs out and it gets cold in Europe, or it gets cold.
And that's the thing laws of thermodynamics are undefeated.
right.
Yeah, if you glue yourself to the road, you're going to stay there.
Until a nice man paid by, you know, taxpayer money comes to, you know, hammer chisel you out. Yeah.
No, for sure. Yeah, Jordan, talk more about your conference coming up and just kind of what people who are interested in Thank God for Bitcoin, how they can find you and what resources they can get to kind of take the next step.
Yeah, I mean, you can find out more about us at tgfb.com. We have a website where our RSS feeder is it RSS for your podcast?
Yeah.
That thing, it's like, doesn't update a lot. So you can find all of our podcasts on Apple and Spotify. I host the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast, which, you know, we just, again, host episodes or host interviews with Bitcoiners and Christians and Christian Bitcoiners, and maybe some people who aren't either, but, you know, aren't any of those things. But I feel like there'll be somebody who'll be tangentially, you know, interesting to Christian Bitcoiners. And then I also host the Thank God for Noster podcast with Hadelbad, who is the creator of the Coracle.social Noster client. And so we interview all kinds of people within the Noster world. He's a dev and he's friends with everyone who's big on Noster. And so yes, he's interviewed, I mean, Fiat Jaff, he's interviewed, I mean, literally anybody who you know of in Noster, John sat down with him and interviewed. And so that's the ways that you can find out about us. And then the conference is going to be, again, July 24th and 25th in Nashville. We have multiple goals with it, but goal number one is, hey, the 2 days before the Bitcoin Magazine conference, come in town, hang out, meet, you know, if you're a Christian Bitcoiner, come and meet a bunch of Christian Bitcoiners. If you're not a Christian Bitcoiner and you're going to be showing up early to go to the regular conference anyhow, you know, you if you don't feel like paying $1,600 for the what's the first day of the conference? Industry day. If you don't feel like spending you don't have $1,600 to spend on an industry day ticket, spend $150 to $200 and come over and hang out with us. And, you know, again, the last couple of years we've had, it's been, I mean, honestly, we can't claim any credit. The Bitcoiners are super generous. We've had Preston Pish come to the event, you know, come to our conference both years. This past year, we had Greg Foss, Larry Lepard, Jeff Ross. I mean, we just have had a bunch of people just be very generous with their time and show up and hang out with people. And so, if you're interested, if that interests you at all, we'd love to have you. The first day of the conference is going to be kind of unpacking, you know, the basically economics through like a Christian lens. And then day two is going to be more specifically Bitcoin related stuff. We're going to do one thing that's new this year is we're going to do a track for like basically independent content creators. So people who are, you know, maybe they're an artist, maybe they're a musician or whatever they are, they're trying to monetize their work. We want to, you know, platform things like Noster, platform people, you know, groups like Wave Lake who are trying to, you know, things like people are using Lightning to give people and decentralize these things and put the money back in the pockets of the people who are actually creating value for people.
Nice.
So, yeah. So we'd love to have you there.
Well, that's awesome. Go ahead, Mike.
I have a final question. I mean, I have several questions, but I have a final question.
Hey, man.
The question is, has your relationship with God changed since you got into Bitcoin? And you may have answered this already, but...
I'll answer this on a number of levels. So number one, yes, it definitely has. I see the scriptures. There's a number of lenses through which you can look at the scriptures. And so you can look at it through like a political lens because there's tons of things that are presented in political language. There's again, so much in the scriptures that is laid out in economic language. There's so, I mean, like the language of salvation is laid out in like redemption, you know, purchased, you know, all of these things. So it's, you know, Bitcoin and you just looking at, you know, through looking at the scriptures through a more economical lens has been super fruitful. I do think, if I'm being perfectly honest, I think I look back on the last 4 years, which again have been great, and I look at it and I'm like, man, okay, I've spent a lot of time understanding Bitcoin. And that's, again, been good and necessary. But I look at it, I look back and I'm like, man, I wish I could have used some of my time differently. I don't think there's anything wrong with you know, giving amount of time that I've given like to understand Bitcoin. But, you know, I have young kids. And so like I look at that and I'm like, okay, it's the trade-off of, you know, I listened to this Bitcoin podcast, Bitcoin podcast number two or three. I could have only listened to one of those and then just spent time here. And so just the reality of the scarcity of other resources like that. It's time with my kid. It's a scarce resource. I don't have an unlimited amount of that. You know, time with my wife, these kind of things. I think it does, it does just make you think about the way you're using your resources differently. You know, whether that's money or time or, you know, whatever it is. So I think I definitely think a lot more about that than maybe I thought before. So yeah, I would say
it's made you a better steward, like you said.
Yeah. Or a more, I would say, yes, it's made me a better steward. It's also made me maybe a more aware steward. So even when I'm not a better steward, it makes me more aware of the fact that I'm not being. And so that's, you know, can be good and bad. So that's the brutally honest answer to that question, I would say at this point.
Nice. Jordan, thanks so much for coming on, man. That was a good conversation. I hope it was, I know what you were expecting coming on the High Hash Rate podcast, but I hope it was
no
good.
Idea. I had no idea what to expect. I was just like, this looks like a marijuana leaf. I'm guessing it's something to do with marijuana and Bitcoin. I have no idea, but hey, we'll find out. So I, again, really appreciate you guys. Appreciate your time. And again, I know the work that goes into doing what you guys are doing. So
for sure.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Jordan. That was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming on our show.
100%. Yeah. Would love to have you guys on at some point too in chat.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We're coming.
Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!